Hello and welcome to Global Sanctuary for Elephants podcast, Global Rumblings. Global Sanctuary for Elephants, or GSE for short, is a non-profit organization with a mission to create vast safe spaces for captive elephants where they are able to heal physically and emotionally, often from very traumatic pasts. I'm your host, Nadia Mari, and I'll be taking you to the lush jungle of the Mato Grosso region in central Brazil, home of GSE's initial project, Elephant Sanctuary Brazil. Currently home to six female Asian elephants, lovingly referred to as the girls. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. And thank you for joining us again this week for a new episode of Global Rumblings. We'll be talking more about Lady, but also catching up on the wildlife at the sanctuary. So let's head over to Brazil to say hi to Kat and Scott. Hello, you two. How are you?
Hey, Nadia. Good. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Hi, Nadia.
So, hi, Kat. Oh, I nearly talked over you there. How can I? Disgraceful.
Oh, good.
So what's the wildlife doing? We talked a couple of weeks ago, I remembered, about the anteaters, about Stan the burrowing owl, and also about the eagle. How are they doing?
Everybody's doing pretty well. The eagle has flown. Yeah, unfortunately, we wanted to have the video of him actually leaving, and I did not properly hook up the wildlife camera. And it did not capture anything as he was leaving his house. So don't have any of his release video, unfortunately. But we did see him fly past the house the other day. And there are folks down the road who have said they've seen a very large bird of prey that is unlike anybody they've seen before. So likely it's him as well. So he seems to be doing okay. But we're really excited that he's gone off to join the flock and find. We do know there are some that are in the region. There are not many.
Oh, really?
There are not many in the whole world, even though he's not directly from the region. There are not many in the, as we talked before, there's less than 2,000 in the world. So hopefully he will find his companions or companions in the region and make more babies.
Oh, lovely. And the other furry ones, Stan the burrowing owl.
Stan the burrowing owl, he's here with Alberta. They're doing pretty well. They were progressing with some of their shifts with their feeding protocols, and hopefully they'll be released in not too distant future. Stan's okay. Doing a pretty good job of digging a hole, so he may dig his way out before that happens. We'll have to see. But they're doing really, really well. They're quite adorable.
Wasn't that the other way around? Sorry, wasn't that the other way around that you thought actually Stan was a girl and Alberta was a boy, but you've just stuck to the names now anyway?
Yeah, that's the name that they are. So we don't really know the gender, but likely it is the other way around from a gender, but we don't really know. Let's see. The two baby anteaters, they're doing well. They keep growing each week. Each time they get weighed, they're a little bit bigger and bigger. Actually, the Bandera, the giant anteater, he jumped a fair bit this week, if I recall. Mm-hmm. So he took a big leap forward. And what else? Mom and baby?
The mom and baby?
Mom and Juvie. Juvie is, we think he's coming and going. He actually climbed into a different area of the fence the other day. So we think that he's been climbing out of the big area, going off and exploring for several days, then coming back and then climbing his way back out again. So that's pretty much ideal to ebb and flow back and forth with mom. Mom is still exploring the big area. She's gone sometimes a day at a time, but we don't think she's climbing over the fence. She's just likely just exploring the larger area. But the Juvie is doing what he's supposed to be doing, is ebbing and flowing away from mom. And at some point, he's probably going to just keep on walking away, which would be ideal. Yeah, so everybody's doing pretty well.
Great. Yeah, because I remember Kat saying that, especially with the anteaters, there were two different species, and especially when they are brought to you so young and you don't know what's happened before, it can be very dangerous. You know, they could be fine one day and then the next day they're dead. So it's wonderful to hear that they both are thriving under your care. So yes, how to segue our way now to the elephants. We talked last week a lot about Lady, your fifth elephant, how she got on the first few days, and especially about her health issues, which recently have been unfortunately not so good, but she's doing better now. She is suffering from osteomyelitis, a degenerative foot disease. So maybe you can tell us more about Lady and the relationship with the various elephants at the sanctuary.
as most people know, she doesn't have relationships with the other elephants here where there's actual physical contact between them. It's just how she is and the choices she makes. I know we had a supporter email and ask about her being the welcome wagon for Pocha and Gijimina, so we'll talk about that a little bit. And the reality with that, or at least what we thought was the case with that, was Pocha and Gijimina, because of their sterile lives and because they couldn't see out in front of them, they just had the concrete walls in front of them and the sky above them. When they first got here, they didn't look like out into the distance. And most likely it's because the distance never existed. So they weren't noticing things that were, you know, 8 feet in front of them. And when Lady came into the first yard when they were initially here, she came over and was hesitant, as she usually is, you know, with somebody she doesn't know. And they didn't respond. They didn't come over. They didn't try to come to the fence or try to do anything. And we think that's what gave her the comfort to stay in the area and go a little bit closer, because she would be near the fence and they wouldn't go anywhere near her. And since she has that weird fight or flight response because of her feet, you know, there's probably comfort in being around an elephant that you know isn't really showing any interest in you. So she hung out for a while and they hung out for a while, and then they started looking up and in the distance. And one day when she was in yard one and Pocha and Gigi were in yard two, Pocha actually looked up and saw her and got startled. I guess it's the first time she noticed there was an elephant in the yard next to her. And she ran away a little bit, and then she like mocked through dirt in her direction, which was actually a little charming only because it did scare her. And once they started looking around and noticing that she was there and kind of approaching where she was, she decided that they weren't as interesting as she thought they were initially. And she started kind of responding the way she does with most of the other elephants that, you know, just wasn't really something she wanted to give her time to. So we think the initial relationship was just because they were acting really, really in a way that Lady appreciated, but it was only because they didn't know she was there.
They weren't looking to get anything from anyone. Yeah. You know, they weren't looking to build relationships. They weren't looking to find the other elephants. You know, as Kat said, they weren't even looking in front of them at all. Many times they're still looking at the ground. So it was really fascinating, and again, nice for Lady, a little bit of a difference, a little bit of a different approach. But
interesting for listeners or supporters who don't know, Pocha and Gijimina are mom and daughter who came from Argentina. Pocha sadly passed away a couple of months after she was rescued to the sanctuary, but they lived a very, very deprived life. We will be talking more about them in episodes to come, but they were literally, their enclosure was a pit, so they would just look straight ahead and onto walls, onto earth walls, and up to the sky, and that was it. So there was no horizon for them because the horizon was just a wall in front of them. So yeah, very interesting. So thank you for that question, Samantha. I hope it was answered to your full satisfaction. If not, send us another email to podcast@globalelephants.org. So what about the other elephants? Ramba had been at the sanctuary 4 weeks before Lady came, and then later on the Powerpuff Girls, Hana, Ramba, Bambi. How was Lady's relationship with them? We did say she's a loner, she's a bit of an introvert because of her feet, fight or flight, you know, she has to protect herself, but is there any interaction?
There has been no physical interaction between Lady and the others, not that we know of anyway. You know, what happens at night, sometimes we don't know, but we have never seen any indication of it. When Ramba came, she was definitely interested in Ramba too. It was actually similar to with Pocha, but because there was a softness to Ramba, there was a gentleness to her. And again, she wasn't trying to explore new friendships. She was exploring the world. You know, she was wandering all over the place. And I think with just Ramba's nature, you know, we actually talked about it before, I'd be curious what would have happened for Lady if Ramba had not passed away. You know, would she have been somebody that Lady would have opened up to? Because Lady was relatively new. Ramba was brand new. I mean, Lady was brand new. Ramba was relatively new. You know, it's impossible to say what would have happened with that. But still, interest, but no comfort to just walk right up to anybody else. There have been times that she's approached the fence and come relatively close to different individuals.
Well, with Rambo, Rambo is in the treatment chute the one afternoon, and Lady started to walk up to her. So we all walked away. So if she wanted to like fully approach, they could have a moment. And she probably got maybe 10 feet away and she stopped. And Rambo wasn't reaching out. They were both very quiet and probably saying a whole lot to each other that we will never know or hear. And then Lady just walked away. But there was another time where Rambo was in the first stall of the barn after getting treatment. And Lady came by the barn, so we opened up to see if she would come inside. And she actually came in the second stall, which was the first time she had shared a barn with anybody. And they're in two separate stalls. There is a gate closed between them. It's not like they're in that space because that space is tiny. But she was definitely more relaxed around Rambo than I think she was with everybody else. But as Scott said, you know, Rambo just had... there was just something about her, and clearly it was something that Lady picked up on as well.
As time went on, you know, she actually did share a space with Mara and Hana. There was quite some time, actually, when Mara and Hana were, this is fast forwarding to post-Mara's arrival.
I was going to say, because she spent time with just Hana initially in the small yards.
Was she with this Hana?
Yeah, because she had the one time where we have the photos from it where Carissa was still here and we were all keeping an eye on everybody and they were only maybe 20 feet apart and Hana trumpeted. And that's when
that's right.
Lady kind of half ran down the fence line and got spooked. Aww. And aww. Poor Hana didn't understand what she did wrong. And, but Hana was great. I mean, they were in the... you know, the smaller yards, they're not huge. She was very aware of Lady's distance requirements. So she wasn't trying to approach her. She was just kind of relaxing, eating, doing her own thing. And then if Lady seemed like she wanted to get further away, Hana wouldn't follow. You know, she'd just stay where she was. And if Lady started coming closer to her, she would also just stay really still. So she didn't do anything to get her to leave. But yeah, that's Hana's nature. She very much is trying to figure out what each individual elephant needs. So we would usually have yards one and two open, but the both of them would be in the same yard. But there was the option just in case Lady didn't feel comfortable that she could go into a separate yard. So they spent a fair bit of time sharing a yard initially. And then again, fast forward to... when Mara came, then Hana and Mara kind of went off and did their own thing. And then it wasn't until later on that Lady shared the bigger yards with both Hana and Mara.
And there were times that, you know, Hana and Mara would be approaching Lady and they were both hyper respectful of that space. Mara was really, really not of Lady's special requirements. And there were times that we were watching and Lady seemed to be bridging that boundary and or crossing that boundary and going a little bit closer. Almost pursuing them, and Mara was walking away, I recall one time. But then eventually Lady would always reach that point as like, no, this is the end of my comfort zone and never make that final approach.
And I think for Mara, she was never super interested in Lady, which worked to Lady's benefit. You know, she was much more interested in Hana. But one of the last times that they spent time together in the big yard, I remember Mara... it's not like she all of a sudden realized she was there, but something shifted where all of a sudden she was curious about her and you would see her looking at her and it's like, please just don't go right up to her and try to touch her. It's like she's comfortable sharing space with you because you are respecting her boundaries. And Mara just looked really interested one day, but she did behave herself and she didn't walk right up to her. But I was a little curious if things were going to shift after that.
So does Lady come down to the barn then for feeding times? Sometimes I see that you feed sort of late afternoon snacks at the barn or you go out on the four-wheeler and if the elephants hear you, they follow you and then you put the food out in the habitat. Does Lady follow the four-wheeler as well or do you look for her in the, I think at the moment she's in the male Asian habitat a lot, isn't she, exploring and eating the fresh grass there. So does she come down to the barn?
Well, we don't really feed anybody at the barn unless they're at the barn. You know, we don't call them back to the barn. We just go to where they are. We stay outside of the fence and they come to the fence line. And almost every night, everyone gets their food. Sometimes Maya misses out because she's off exploring. But almost every time they come to a fence line, they get their supplements, get their goodies, do a little checkup, make sure everybody looks okay. And that happens in any number of configurations of elephant locations and elephant pairings. So right now with Lady being in the mail yard, of course, yeah, we just go to the mail yard. She comes to the fence, or if she's deep in the habitat, we'll drive in the four-wheeler and put her food deep in the habitat also, because she needs to make sure, we need to make sure she gets her afternoon meds because of the supplements that she's on, her pain meds and anti-inflammatories and additional supplements. She needs to get those at least twice a day.
Okay, so the feeding, when we wrap up and you say, oh, we've got elephant feeding, then obviously you said once that the elephants can feed themselves in the habitat because there's lots of grass and everything. So this afternoon elephant feeding is really just to make sure that they're getting their supplements, which you then hide in their treats or give them with their treats, and also just to check up on the day to see everything's okay. So it's not like in a zoo where they have to be fed. They can just spend the whole day running around the sanctuary, which they do, eating branches and grass and everything, but this is just an extra.
Yeah, especially for the older girls, because they arrive generally pretty compromised, you know, like Bambi, who is probably about 1500 pounds underweight. You know, we do supplemental feeding and we add a lot of extra hay if they need to put on weight. And in dry season, you know, towards the end of the dry season, there's still stuff to eat, but not as much. So again, because they are geriatric ladies, except for Gijamina, they're naturally losing muscle mass because of their age. We want to make sure that they're not going into the negative as far as food reserves go. So we do give extra hay along with their grains and produce and supplements and medications.
Okay, so it's supplementary feeding is the correct term.
Yeah, given the age, as Kat said, given the age of everybody in the physical condition and 40 or 50 years of negligent care, you know, there's a lot of supplements they get for digestive supplements, arthritis meds, things of this nature that most elephants end up having issues with because of what's gone on with them in captivity. You know, it really wouldn't be fair just to say, hey, go fend for yourself because of the ailments that they're dealing with, any more than you would say that to an elderly human that said, you know, that needs that supportive care, say, oh, sorry, you're on your own. No, you do a little bit extra, especially for these geriatric girls.
I didn't mention it in our last recording, but in the show notes, I did link up to a blog post on your website regarding foot care and osteomyelitis. I know from elephants in Japan, foot issues is a big topic, and we have had a few elephants that have died due to foot health. So what is it, maybe coming back to the topic of foot health, what is it with captivity and the lack of mobility that causes these foot health issues? Because I remember, Kat, you gave us some information for your support group, Friends of GSE, a photograph of cross-section of an elephant's foot. And I was quite surprised. I didn't know that elephants actually stand on their toes. It looked like from the side, like a wedge shoe. So maybe you can just explain a little bit more. Why is movement so important for elephants, for their feet?
Yeah, I mean, a big part of it boils down to general health and living in sanitary conditions. When you live in a zoo, you know, you don't have good overall health. Your body doesn't fight infection the way it normally should. You're living in substandard conditions. You're living in very unsanitary conditions a lot of times because the amount of bacteria that is present. No matter how much cleaning you do in a small space, you can't remove all of the dung or all of the urine. And, you know, that just, that can cause infections in the toes.
I mean, that sort of stuff soaks into the ground. You know, when we have elephants that, like when elephants first arrive and they spend time at the barn, we dig out almost the entire barn to replace all of the sand. And you're talking about, we're going a couple of feet down, because even though we clean up every time they go to the bathroom afterwards, all of that stuff still just soaks in. It's why elephants don't eat the grass that's growing in their exhibit if they have any. I mean, it's been urinated on thousands of times. And it's not, you know, nobody wants to eat that sort of thing. So it's not like we're saying that at zoos they don't clean up after their elephants or other facilities. Right. But the reality is, no matter how much you clean up when the space is that small, it's not clean. And you can't dig out the whole exhibit every 6 months and replace all the dirt, which is essentially what you would need to do to keep it clean. And not just to keep it clean, to prevent the dirt from becoming compacted. You know, they did a study with one of the zoo elephants where they replaced their dirt, because in the study it showed essentially that, I forget, it was like a foot and a half down was almost as dense as concrete, because they just walk on the same spaces over and over and over again. And every time they step, it compacts the dirt more. So even though you have these facilities that have dirt substrates, if they're not rotating that dirt, if they're not turning it over, if they're not replacing it, it doesn't matter. They might as well be standing on concrete.
And historically, zoos, a lot of times they went from more natural substrates to concrete because of the health considerations, trying to keep it more sanitary. But then that caused secondary effect with bruising of the toes and long-term damage of the joints. As it was with any animal, a human or otherwise, standing on hard surfaces, it does have an impact on joint health, promoting a lot of osteoarthritis. And all of these things just degrade overall health. But going back to our feet, you know, the other factor, without proper foot care, you end up having a lot of cracks and crevices, small lesions, and those are just orifices for bacteria to enter and start migrating into the foot. And as that bacteria starts migrating, creating infection, the infection continues to grow, eventually gets into the bones and continues to expand from there. Some of that is preventable just with proper foot care, because you can minimize the amount of open lesions, the amount of cracks, the amount of debris that is stuck inside these natural cracks in the elephant's foot, or feces that's stuck in there, all these things that, you know, or the contaminated dirt that's stuck in there. A lot of times is along the cuticle line, a little damage to the cuticle, you end up creating infections. The cuticles end up being a little bit more susceptible sometimes because of the impact of concrete. Standing on concrete and walking on concrete pushes the nail up into the cuticle more sometimes, creating little abscesses in the cuticle. Again, prime source for infection to enter, or bacteria to enter, create infection, and then continue to crescent from there.
And if you have overgrown toenails, just from a comfort perspective, like you said, the bones actually go into the toenails. Well, they're right behind the toenails. So if the toenails are overgrown, it actually puts pressure on the bones, which then radiates up through the toes to the rest of the foot, to the ankles, so on and so forth. So even just from overgrowth, where the pad is supposed to naturally support the weight, not the toenails, when the toenails overgrow and they start supporting some of the weight, then that causes a completely different set of issues that are more... They cause, you know, joint issues and so on and so forth, but it's more pain focused than ailment focused when you have that. It's then what happens when you don't trim the nails. And it's kind of the same thing with the pads, where you create these areas that either you get cracks in the nails from too much pressure, or you can get cracks in the nails from trimming when they're too dry. I mean, there's a million different ways that all of that can go wrong. But all of those things just create opportunities for infection to start superficially. But unfortunately, with the way elephants' feet are, everything just kind of migrates inwards. And then some of those infections become systemic. And yeah, foot disease in the U.S. is still top three causes of death in captive elephants. Yeah. And it used to be number one for a really long time, and then got bumped by elephant herpes virus, which is terrible, because it's all of these, not that baby elephants are more important, but you have all of these baby elephants dying in zoos across the world from herpes virus. And that actually is what bumped foot disease out of the top place.
And in nature then, from my understanding, or for the understanding of our listeners, in nature that wouldn't or doesn't happen, because an elephant is walking, I think an Asian elephant, about 30 kilometers a day, foraging, looking for food, brushing its feet off on shrubs, on stones. So it's like a natural pedicure all the time, which doesn't happen in a zoo.
No, exactly. You know, You're exactly right that as you're walking, and even when you see it here in sanctuary, as you're walking through the tall grass and on the different substrates, there ends up being a natural wear and tear. Even for the cuticles, you know, just walking through the tall grass, it conditions the cuticles. When we get to when Poti and Gijimina came, their cuticles were grossly overgrown. And was within 6 weeks, 8 weeks, they actually completely took care of themselves, you know, with really? Moisture wow. and the tall grass, the excessive growth trimmed down, and they were beautiful. And it was just from walking through the tall grass. It doesn't resolve everything, especially given the history for how long these elephants have been compromised in captivity. But it does help tremendously. And in the wild, yes, you know, from birth, they're walking, you know, many, many miles a day, multiple substrates, getting their feet soaked in the rains, soaked in the rivers, and then going back out, walking across different substrates. All of these things help to just create a natural wear and tear, keep proper foot health. And then as well, you're not dealing with the same level of bacteria exposure. And then on top of that, you have better general health. Just because of exercise, movement, proper diet, psychological stimulation, emotional stimulation. You know,
the list goes on and on and on.
You know, all the things that end up causing compromise in captivity.
How is Lady these days?
Lady these days, we are definitely seeing what we knew would happen with her foot progression or foot digression. When she arrived, we did radiographs of her feet to see the extent of the infection of impact on the bones, and it was quite advanced. With that, we knew that we were dealing with a situation of just long-term maintenance, trying to slow the disease down as much as possible, provide as much comfort as possible, and trying to hold this back for as long as we could. Recently, we've been seeing increased inflammation, decreased joint mobility, increased degeneration of her toes. You know, this is the nature of osteomyelitis in captive elephants, especially one who is relatively in good health. And I say that she's actually in great health for her age and what she's been through, with the exception of her feet. And for us, it's one of the harder components of this to accept, because her feet are going to give out on an otherwise healthy body, and it's going to cause her premature demise, all because of captivity and the negligence of, you know, lack of foot care.
How old is Lady now? Do you mid 50s, 60? Do you know? It's always difficult with the paperwork, you said, because it never really exists.
I think she's around 54, 56, 54, but I don't remember exactly. Yeah. I mean, the youngest of our older ladies, which is everybody but Gigi, is Maya, and she's just over 50, and then Lady's next.
You were going to say something else.
Who knows now?
But we did say last week that Lady, despite this disease, is very strong, and she's, you know, I see videos and see posts of you showing how she's she's walking around exploring in the male Asian habitat and eating grass. And so she still is incredibly active.
Yeah, right now, she, through the years, I mean, she's had a lot of really great weeks, you know, great months and great years, actually, with a lot of exploration. And how she gets to where she gets to sometimes is a great unknown.
She's gone to areas of the property that probably only Maya's been to out of everybody. I mean, she doesn't hold herself back at all. And she is smart enough to restrict herself when she is having flare-ups and that sort of thing. So it's not like she's doing all of this and causing more damage or really hurting herself. I mean, she's so strong. And she's had quite the time at Sanctuary.
And that has slowed down a little bit, slowed down quite a bit, actually, in the last few 3 months. And she'll have good days and bad days. And I guess earlier this week, she would walk a little bit, explore for a few hours, then sit still for the better part of a day, or not sit still, but not wander. And then she'd explore a little bit more and then wander for another little bit and then sit still for another 12 hours or more. Yesterday and today, she's exploring, being a little bit more active. But it ebbs and flows, you know, good days and bad days. And sometimes she's super tolerant with treatment. And another time she is more in the place of just leave me alone today, please.
And we had a supporter who was messaging with me yesterday, and she's like, I feel her pain. She's like, I have a bad knee, and it is one of those things that causes me pain on a daily basis. And some days it's worse than others. And she was talking about respecting how we take things day by day and the overall view of it. Because I think sometimes it's hard when you say that lady is painful. I mean, the reality is lady's been painful since the first day we met her. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt about that. We've always known this was going to be most likely the cause of her death. But there is that difference between being in pain and suffering. You know, there are a lot of people who have had surgeries on different parts of their bodies where, you know, on rainy days, it's actually really painful, you know, and they have to take something, or varying degrees of having issues that can cause you regular pain. And that's where Lady's been for a long time, where it is, you know, there is this regular pain she has. But like in humans, it's a weird thing, but you just kind of get used to it. It's that I've had shoulder surgery and sometimes I don't even realize there's just this low grade pain there all the time until like it goes away one day and I'm like, wow, okay. You know, so there is, there's varying degrees, and it's not like lady's been here for 4 years and she's been suffering and she's been debilitated and she's been miserable or any of those things. You know, we're not keeping her alive just for the sake of keeping her alive. You know, she's had a great quality of life and she has been, to use an easy term, happy. You know, you see her off exploring or in the middle of pasture at the edge of the woods grazing, and the look on her face, it's clear that she's in a good place and life for her is good. It is a conversation that we have regularly. Where is she at today? Where is she at this hour? Is she comfortable? How far is it progressing? And just to make sure that we do continue to provide her with quality of life while she's here, not cross that line.
And a lot of that assessment, as Kat's talking, is where is she today? It's from everybody. You know, different people feeding, you know, we don't do the same person feeding the same elephant because we want different perspectives. You know, how does she seem to you today? You know, and that determines everything with her. How we proceed is all based on where she is on that day. Is it a day that we all celebrate with her, or is it a day that she just needs a little bit more quiet and calm?
Well, I'm sure that I speak for all your supporters that I hope, and we all hope, that Lady will continue to have her wonderful life as long as she can and continue to explore the male Asian habitat until one day your male Asian elephant comes, but also explore the rest of the habitat on her terms and enjoy life as much as and long as she can. So, okay, I'll let you go. The time is running out. So now that I've learned the correct term, you will probably be going off to supplement the elephants with fence feeding or feeding by the fence. Is that right? Or what else have you got planned for today?
Actually, we still have to do ladies' treatment today.
Ah, ladies' treatment. Oh, okay.
When we get done here, we'll go down and do ladies' treatment and then follow up with supplemental feedings.
Supplemental feeding. Okay, great. Well, thanks for taking time out again for your busy schedule. And yes, we'll meet up then for our next recording. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you again,
Nadia. You too,
Nadia. Bye. Take care.
Okay, bye. As we wrap up this week's episode, a reminder that if you'd like to stay up to date with current events at the Sanctuary, you can do so by following Global Sanctuary for Elephants on their various social media channels. You'll find all the details in the show notes. Thank you so much, and until we meet up in 2 weeks' time, take care. Yeah.